recognize that we're still waiting for rules from the full Ways and Means, and up until that time we are able to, on a temporary basis, receive assigned bills to our various committees and have an opportunity to have public hearings, hold public hearings on those, including House Bill 5002 for the Department of Administrative Services budget request. Good morning. Karen Segrist is our clerk this morning from the administration, and Dallas Wyand is from our fiscal officer from the State Legislative Fiscal Office. So we'll go ahead and commence. Dallas, would you like, you've got a short sheet there that tells us what we're going to be doing for the next several days, I guess.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Department of Administrative Services, I've got a little handout for you that there are 18 budgetary programs or elements within this department. Almost all are other funded. I would like to point out that three of these elements or programs will not be discussed as part of this budget. We've agreed with the department to move those three elements to a discussion that will occur probably with the governor's office budget. These are the Community Development Office, the Arrest and Return Program, and the Office for Health Policy and Research. They had asked for that consideration because the governor has yet to decide exactly how he wants to proceed with these. Also, we will
It's Community Development.
Community Development, Office for Health Policy and Research, and the Arrest and Return Program. Also, we will be reviewing the department's capital construction budget request in as part of this, but it won't be part of this bill. We'll do the heavy lifting in this one, reviewing the projects and the like, and make preliminary recommendations that those dollars will be incorporated in the capital construction bill, but we will do the heavy lifting in this one. If you look at the total numbers, you'll see that my analysis of the governor's recommended budget, this is a rather long one, will differ in total from what is in the governor's printed budget, and that's because of about $131 million of special payments to the Oregon Health Sciences University. For budgetary presentation and discussion purposes, we have moved that money to the OHSU budget, and in our presentations, the money actually does flow through the department. The monies are appropriated to the Department of Administrative Services for payment to OHSU, but for purposes of the education program discussion, versus just the administrative role that the department has in taking the money and distributing them, where that money is not included here. It will be taken up with OHSU. The department did have one budget note out of this last session, and that was merely to unschedule some funds for e-government until the plans had been reviewed. That was subsequently reviewed, and they are moving forward on that. However, in the budget report, there were three statements of expectations that certain additional staffing had been provided in the budget, and we were to see some improvements in state government and better management practices, improved review and oversight of technology projects that have statewide implications, and improved compliance with personnel laws, rules, and regulations. These will be discussed as they come forward with various components of the budget presentation. Audit reports that have been issued, in addition to the two comprehensive annual financial reports that had been issued and audited by the Secretary of State, there were four audit reports. I've listed them there. One was on Information Resources Management Division Review, a Data Center General Controls Review, Statewide Systems Development Review, and a State Agency Energy Conservation review or report on those conservation efforts. If you would like those reports, we can get them for you. They are available on the Secretary of State Audit Division's website. And if any of them are particularly interesting to you, I'll get copies for the committee. The department was asked to provide some interim reports and studies. They have done so on various ones. There's a list there. There was a report on the impact of hiring freeze, reports on vacancies, report on coordination of aircraft, report on fleet management, which is statutorily required, and that one, I might add, was reviewed at some length by Senator Clarno's task force. And then there was a report on the use of those things that start the heart. Thank you. Anyhow, the department has met all of those requirements and issued those reports. I have, each of you has a kind of an agenda for the a schedule, if you will, for this. It's in a memo, a copy of a memo I sent to Chair Butler. This is how you can expect to see the various operating units and divisions do their budget presentations. So as the budget presentation materials are available and prepared, they will be getting them to you to be put in this binder. If rules are adopted and if other things come into place, we may be able to go to work session if the chairs allow, when it's scheduled, which is Thursday, February 13th. A lot of ifs there. There are a number of binders. I will point out each of you has this budget binder. There's a supplemental detailed computerized list binder, which we didn't put in front of each of you. The copies are back here if you'd like to go to that level of detail. I just felt that we could stack them here, but it may be a bit cumbersome. In addition, then you'll have the presentation binder.
Thank you very much. Representative Patrick is recognized.
Thanks. I just wondered, Fitz and I have talked. Nice article in the Oregonian, by the way. Front page. I just wondered if there's going to be, it appears like we're changing the role of DAS, and I don't know how well that's reflected in the budget as to kind of becoming more of a COO for the state. I know that there was some move by the previous governor when Mr. Greenfield became the director to do some of that. I'm wondering how much of that is going to be reflected in the proposed budget because of the short time constraints you had, or if DAS anticipates that there will be many changes as a result of policy initiatives that may be initiated by the governor's office as to the direction that we're headed. So just as I have to answer that now, Gary, but when we move through the presentation, I'm interested in that particular piece because that will affect the other budgets that Representative Winters and myself and the other members of this committee here.
Thank you very much. Why don't we just go right ahead, and Gary, turn the floor to you and get you started on your budget this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Good morning, members of the committee. I'm Gary Weeks, Director of the Department of Administrative Services. As I begin, let me make sure I introduce a couple of other people that are with me here, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, just so you know who's in the audience, if I can find them. Colleen Seelock, directly behind me, is the Director of Operations for DAS. Next to her is Jim Carboni, who is our financial analyst. In the very back is Cindy Becker, who is the Assistant Director for Legislative Affairs, and Cora Parker is our very own budget analyst, analyzing our budget as a member of DAS. So, I'm into my third week here now at DAS, third week on my second tour of duty, I think I should also say. So some of you know that in 1993, Governor Roberts appointed me to head DAS, and I did that until the election of Governor Kitzhaber. So it was about a year and a half or so, maybe a little longer, that I ran DAS 10 years ago. And in between that, managed a couple of other agencies. So I have feelings about DAS from having managed it 10 years ago and from having been an agency that received services for DAS over time. And, Mr. Chairman, I guess maybe that this all relates to Representative Patridge's question about DAS, because I do have some vision for DAS that may be different, and it's a vision that the governor not only shares but actually initiated, and that is a vision of DAS of being in a little bit more of a leadership position than it's been historically. The governor has been, I think, pretty clear in saying that he actually wanted someone to be held accountable for the performance of government agencies, public agencies in his government. And that someone at this point is me, in the sense that he wanted somebody, the person to run DAS, to be also viewed as the director of state government operations. I mean, he in the past has talked about chief operating officer, and that's essentially what he means. Someone that he and the legislature can hold accountable for government's performance. And at some point in this presentation, I want to talk with you a little bit about the performance standards and the performance expectations that the governor hopes to bring to bear on the agency. So I do see DAS as evolving into a little bit different position. It's not completely reflected in this budget. And so one of the things that I would, as we go through this budget, ask the committee to do is to give me some flexibility over the next couple of years to really try to change DAS and be able to take on that role of more of a leadership in state government and an agency that is responsible for the performance of government. And there are a couple of places that as we go through the budget that I'll point to where I think, you know, if I can get the ability through this committee and the legislature as a whole, we can begin to look at a different kind of agency. And that's not to say that DAS has performed poorly in the past. I should be clear about that. It's just that we have a new governor. We have, I know a number of new members of the legislature and a new director in myself, and I have some things I really want to do with the agency. So with that, just a very brief response to Representative Patridge's question, let me next make sure that I contribute to this. I run an agency that never saw an acronym it didn't like, you know. So, or acronyms are us, however you want to describe it.
I'm certainly have bought the DAS acronym already.
I'm paying for that. I'm going to do my very best. I don't know how far $5 will get me, Mr. Chairman, but when I'm out, you can bang the gavel and I'll contribute again. But
Thank you very much. The American Cancer Society appreciates that. I'm going to do
my best, Mr. Chairman, to try not to use those acronyms and use the full name of what we're talking about.
Thank you.
I've been trained over the last several hours on how to operate this machine. It's one finger on one arrow and a finger on another arrow, so I think I can do this. The mission of DAS, and this is a mission that the agency had before I got here, so this is nothing that I have had an opportunity to influence, but I think it's a good start. I mean, and the thing that I like about this statement is that it centers around providing leadership and accountability. And those are the two things which I think I've just said to you already that are of the greatest importance to me as this agency is managed and its resources used, is that we find a way to be the lead in state government and to hold not only DAS, the Department of Administrative Services, accountable, but all other agencies accountable for the work that we do on behalf of the public and at your direction, I should say. The goals of DAS, implementing policy and financial decisions that are made by you and by the governor, trying to set and monitor standards of accountability, trying to assure that public dollars, whether they be in fees or taxes or whatever source, they're all public dollars, that those are used productively and efficiently, effectively in our programs. Other goals to support state agencies by providing a management infrastructure that we think will support them to exemplify good management practices. If we can't set the standard at DAS, it's going to be very difficult for me to hold other agencies accountable for their performance. So we have a high management practice standard that we have to hold ourselves to. Partnering with private enterprise and citizens and other government entities, I'm particularly interested in this. It's a part of that what I see as the new vision for DAS, and that is to reach out and say, how do we use the resources and the energy that DAS has in partnership with people in government as well as outside of government. The governor has as one of his main initiatives, you know, the improvement of our economic development program. Well, we could play a major role in that. We are a major purchaser of services. We are a major user of services. We don't do that in partnership very well with the private sector. So that's one of the things I want us to be looking for in the future. The performance measures, current measures that we have now are specific to divisions. And one of the things that we've talked with your staff about is my interest in developing performance measures that are DAS-wide. We don't have them today. We haven't had them in the past. And my intent is to try to have some things sort of on the chart for you before we finish this budget presentation. There are division-specific performance measures. You'll hear those as they go through it, and then eventually I want to roll out some department-wide performance measures. This is an organization chart which I hope you can see. You have something in front of you that reflects it. This is the current biennium, what DAS looks like in terms of organization structure. We have 975 positions, 947.29 FTE. That's what we're operating under today. This is what DAS under this budget proposal will look like in the coming biennium, 927 positions and 919.45 FTE. Now let me run through just some of the differences here. In the last biennium, we had a division that we called Transportation, Purchasing, and Print Services. That is now, if you look in the second column from the left, what we call Procurement, Fleet, and Surplus Properties. It's much smaller as a division because we took all the people that were doing the electronic printing work that's really information technology work. It's not printing as we used to know. We took those positions out and moved them into information resource management, which is at the top of the third column from the right. So we actually increased the size of information resource management and decrease the size of what we now call procurement, fleet, and surplus property or surplus services. But again, the reason for that transfer was to get people who were doing printing electronically connected to the information technology group and out of a group that didn't have a good fit for them. So that's one of the major changes you'll see. The reductions in the FTE come from a reduction in the Office for Health Policy and Research, which is at the bottom of the second column from the right. There are 15 positions there. There were 32 in the last biennium. Many of those were limited duration. We took all of those out. So what's left is 15 positions. So we cut 17 positions out of there. There was, in the last biennium, something that was called the Sustainability Board. This was an initiative of Governor Kitzhaber's around sustainability. I don't know that board actually did much, but I wasn't here. I just can't find much history about what was accomplished. There is no sustainability board in the budget. There are no positions for it at this point. Now, that doesn't mean to say the governor is not interested in a sustainability initiative. And, in fact, the governor is right now working with a group on developing a real sustainability initiative that could apply across all agencies, and we'll have a chance to talk with you about that a little bit more down the road. But this particular board, which had two FTE, we took those out because it wasn't operating. So you had those changes. There were other limited duration positions that were removed from information resource management. And so the effect is to have a reduction of about 48 positions in the budget that we're proposing for the next biennium, and it's a little under 30 FTE. I want to talk with you briefly, because we'll get into detail on each one of these, about the kinds of programs that we administer. And they're basically of three types. One is the first is the statewide management, where our job is to provide the leadership and the oversight of agencies, and that's done through my office, the Office of the Director, through the Budget Management Shop, which manages the state budget, through the State Controllers Division, which is our whole accounting function for state government, the Human Resources Services Division, where our Personnel Center and Labor Relations Center is for state government, and for our Information Resource Management Division, responsible for leading the technology development of state government. These are all supported largely by fee assessment. So we assess agencies to support these statewide functions. The next program area is what we call services, facilities, all the work that we do around securing, maintaining facilities that state government uses, the purchasing fleet and surplus operations, Risk Management, our state insurance program, and the Public Employees Benefit Board. These are fee-for-service programs, different from the others. We don't assess agencies a fee. They pay based on the services. So facilities, it's a square foot charge. Fleet, it's, you know, however miles they use in the vehicles. Risk management based on the number of employees you're insuring, and so on. So that's a fee-for-service part of our program. And the last area of our work is around what we call policy offices, and they're basically two. Community Development Office, which some of you may know as Community Solutions, what it's been called in the past, but it's the same thing, Community Development Office, Community Solutions. The Office of Health Policy and Research, where we just hired a new person to come in, Dr. Bruce Goldberg, who's a physician, was with CARE Oregon, has served as a county public health officer. I'm very excited about having Dr. Goldberg come on board, and he'll have a chance to appear before you down the road. These policy offices are what Mr. Whalen referred to as the parts of the budget that will come to you a little bit later within the whole governor's budgets. Let's see, I want to visit with you now a little bit about some of the, I'm trying to stay to the menu that you gave us, the key strategies that we have in the operation of the department as a whole. And that is to, I think, first and foremost, provide you and the governor with information and analysis that's true, accurate, up-to-date, so on. I mean, I think that's a major responsibility that we have. Our second strategy is to increase the accountability and the performance of government, and maybe this is the place to say to you that the governor's very interested in two kinds of performance management, and I want to make sure that we're clear on it. We're not just about performance measurement in what we're trying to do. Measuring performance is very important, but managing to performance is really the end goal for us. And the two initiatives that the governor is very interested in along in this performance arena is, first and foremost, to set up for every agency administrator a set of performance expectations that will be very clear in writing that we can hold performance that we can hold agency administrators accountable to. And I'm doing that right now. I'm designing with the staff, designing the form that we will use for every agency head. And frankly, I think there are a number of agency heads, Mr. Chairman, that will find this of some comfort, because I've worked for governors in the past where the expectations were never as clear as I would like to have had them be as a manager. I mean, I did what I thought was the right thing and hoped that the governor would agree. In this case, it's going to be real clear, because we're going to set it out for agency heads. And for every agency head, there'll be some common performance expectations. Building a diversified workforce is going to be a performance expectation for every one of our agency heads. Aligning with benchmarks that relate to the agency's performance will be something else we're going to want every agency head to do. Building a program so that we have a succession plan in agencies. One of the great challenges for state government, and I've watched this for 28 years, is we don't do very good succession planning. We don't train, prepare, develop people so that when someone leaves in a major leadership position, we're there with somebody who's trained and capable of stepping in and doing the job. You know, many places we're about an inch deep. It doesn't mean we don't have smart people who can come in and do this. It's saying we don't do a good job of preparing for that. So succession planning will be common to every agency head's expectation list. Then there will be things that are unique to each agency that will be part of that expectation planning. So that's going to be developed. You know, my hope is to have these expectation plans ready within the next couple of months. I mean, we're going to have the first ones ready within this month, is my expectation. The second piece beyond a performance expectation that's set for individual agency administrators is developing for every agency a set of performance goals and measurements that go with those goals, so there's some common agreement about what the agency is working toward. I mean, I know you set that in part in what you do as a legislature, but agencies need to bring this stuff forward to you to say, here's what we believe our goals are, and this is how we're going to measure our success. And I don't want this to be an inside baseball game where it's just government sets this. So, you know, my intent is as we work with the agencies to develop the goals, that we bring people from outside of government who use these agency services to help us determine, are these the right goals? You know, for example, transportation. We've already begun this. I have a set of preliminary goals that the Department of Transportation has set forward. I don't know how those line up with the users of our transportation system, you know, and so we're going to bring people in to look at that and have folks say, yep, these are the right goals, or no, they're not the right goals. Or they could be the right goals, but the performance is not measured in the right way. You can measure performance in any number of ways, and so what we want to do is establish the correct goals and the correct way to measure our progress, and then be able to be in a position of coming back to you all and saying, here's what we did over the last couple of years. And then the next step to this is to connect it to a budget process so that you begin to have a performance budgeting system. And, you know, these are very sequential. I mean, you have to work to get the goals right, the measurements right, before you connect it to the budget process. I've spent the last 2 years working in states building performance measurement systems, and there's a tendency to want to leap forward and connect this to the budget without actually building a good system that where everybody has some agreement around the goals and how you're going to measure it, and then you connect it and say, what kind of budget do we need to support this? And so that's the plan, that's the governor's intent, that's what I'm charged to do with under this rubric here of increasing performance and accountability of government. The third bullet there is unnecessary duplication. Now, when I first looked at this, I said, what is necessary duplication? But in fact, there are places where there is, you want some duplication, you want some checks and balances and so on like that. But we want to look across government and find out where we're duplicating our energy.
Mr. Chair,
I
just have a question, because will you, when you find where there is instance of duplication, and sometimes that could be because of some statutory language or something there, then bring those instances and recommendations to this body? Because I know sometimes we find it, and it's because there's some enabling legislation that has produced the duplication.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Winters, absolutely. I mean, and agencies can be acting in complete good faith because they're driven by a statute that says this is what we expect you to do, and then we find out that somebody else is doing it in another agency, which either has a statutory charge to do it or a directive, a budget note, or something like that. I mean, and so, Senator Winters, we very definitely will bring those to you when they require you to change the statute, and then you have the option, of course. But there may be other places that are more administrative things that don't require you to act, and that we can step in and say, we're not going to duplicate this effort. The fourth bullet there is a strategy for us to establish the standards and policies that are going to govern agency administrative functions. And under this, I think about the whole admin rule process. And the governor was very clear with the agency heads a week ago when he met with them in the employment department and said, you know, I want to review all the administrative rules that are in place in your agency. I want to know that they're all required or important. I don't want them to be in place to avoid a risk. And this is something the governor and I have talked about a great deal, and you know, I've seen develop over a lot of years. Administrative rules are written in many cases to protect us. You know, protect us from if we're sued, we have a rule that we can stand by. We have a defense you can only protect yourself so much, you know. And I think the governor, I know the governor said to agencies, I'm willing to take more risk and write fewer rules that are actually only designed to protect us as the bureaucracy and not to accomplish our work. And so this whole business about administrative functions, you know, we want a thorough review of all administrative rules. And that's going to be a big job. But the truth is, having written some of these over a lot of years, You know, they get written and they don't very frequently get reviewed.
Gary, if I could stop you right there, that's going to be very important, but you're going to lay out then the statute side by side with the rule and find out in the process that there are rules that have nothing to do with statute, that do not mirror the statute, that don't even appear that they were written from the same statute.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is, what are you going to do about that? Are you going to then direct agencies who have gone out on complete dead-end streets looking for something to regulate, which isn't provided for in the statute, on, you know, folks with their own agendas, and that, unfortunately that's happened more than I'd like to even talk about in the last 8 to 12 years. So my concern is that I'm trying to work people through, and they're looking at the law and they're saying, this is good law. We don't see any problem with it. But we can't function under these departments because the rules are totally foreign to the law itself, and that's a great concern to advance the business cause. Because back in 1991, 92, there were some, and early 93, there were some rules written and promulgated by the various departments, which did not reflect the statutes at all. The statutes didn't account for some of those things. There were people with missions, and the missions were accomplished, and that was to stop business dead in its tracks in certain regards.
Mr. Chairman, that is absolutely the reason to do this, to go through the rules. If a rule is in place, it has to be in place in order to affect or implement the statute. That's the reason it's supposed to be there, and to make the statute workable. If the statute is so clear that there's no need for a rule, then there shouldn't be a rule. You shouldn't write a rule for the statute if it's that clear. And if the rule does not relate to any statutory charge or responsibility, then we'd want to know why the rule is in place, why it remains in place. And sometimes you can find rules that have been written. I mean, I know this from having managed OSHA. When I went over to the Department of Insurance and Finance, the OSHA rules were a parody of the statute, you know, and for whatever reason they just had made the decision that they needed a rule which repeated the statute, and that occurs in other places. Now, the other thing that I need to say in fairness to some of the agencies, you know, I've sat in hearings, and I believe some of you may have, where the legislation is being crafted and the committee will say, well, we've got an agreement here, let's let the rule process define how this operates. And so agencies then, you know, are left to write rules to define the process for the statute. And what we have to say is, yeah, that has happened, but does the rule that you've written actually forward the legislation? You know, is it consistent with the legislation? But agencies in some cases are left to write rules that make the statute work. And I think that's a legitimate purpose for a rule. But there is no reason for us to review all these rules, Mr. Chairman, if we're not prepared to do away with some of them that as you have described, create an agenda on the part of the agency that isn't consistent with any legislative history.
Thank you.
At all. So,
Senator Winters.
Along that line, are you also planning to look at, as you look at rules, and are you also going to get into the multiplicity of forms that are out there that have no real reason for being there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Winters, yes. You know, we'd like to find a way to consolidate forms, not repeat, you know, forms. I mean, even within DAS, we're trying to bring up a new system that will enable someone when they come into government. It creates your personal action form. That's what starts your job, so that the system then follows employees as they move around government. So I come in on day one, I get assigned a phone, I'm in government. Every move I make, the number goes with me, and the payroll information goes with me. Everything tracks with me as an employee. It's just one example of, we're not filling out change orders every time somebody moves, filling out new personnel action forms, filling out everything, because all that has a cost to it. and it has a bureaucracy that's built up around it. So,
well, I raise that because I understand the pride of authorship that exists within inside of agencies, so often it's kind of hard to get rid of them because I authored it, and someone else over here said, well, I authored this one, and you find that pretty soon we have a dearth of forms out there, and the poor public who's having to fill them out don't know why they're filling out everything that we're sending to them. And I didn't know that we still had forms management that still exist in, because at one time we had created forms management just to get rid of all of the massive number of forms that exist in government.
Dearth of common sense and an excess of forms, it sounds like. Yes, Senator Devlin is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Weeks, along with all this talk about efficiency and getting rid of duplication and administrative rules, one of the things that you haven't commented on is some of the agencies that you will oversee those efficiencies on are guided very clearly by federal law, federal CFRs. To what degree, I mean, this is like opposing Goliath, actually, in a sense, but to what degree could we stand up a little bit more straightly with the federal government and maybe back down some of the burdensome oversight requirements in terms of it sounds easy to, you know, reduce the amount of paperwork, et cetera, but it seems like, in particularly in some programs, there is a plethora of requirements in terms of documenting.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, it isn't. I don't mean to say it's going to be easy to reduce work. It's going to be hard work to do this. And in the federal system, I think we ought to stand up much more frequently than we do. And I think we have to resist what you hear from some agencies. And I've run agencies that have a lot of federal funds, and some agencies will use the federal government as the shield to say we have to do this because we're required to do it by federal law. So the first question is, where's the federal law that requires you to do this? What does it say to be sure that it actually there is a law like that or a requirement of something from the federal government? And then if so, then I think the next step, Senator, is to say, how do we change this? You know, how aggressive can we be and with whom to try to change this? But you know, there have been and will continue to be instances where people don't want to, you know, they don't want to change behavior, and they use the federal law as the shield, and we have to determine whether there's any substance there and then go after it. So I would prefer that we be much more aggressive, that agencies would be in that regard.
Mr. Chairman, follow up. I have some more general questions, but I'd like to hold them until later.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Devlin. Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess sitting here listening to you talk takes me back to the first budget that I heard when I got here, which was the DAS budget. And it's a little deja vu all over again. I'm hoping that there are some aggressive timelines that accompany what you're planning on doing. I'm fully supportive of the direction that you're headed, and I'm respectful of the fact that you've only been here for 3 weeks. But I could close my eyes and substitute you for Mike Greenfield. This was some of the substance was exactly the same, even the same words that we heard 2 years ago. And I guess is all I'm trying to suggest is a sense of urgency and timeline so that there are some measurables. It's great to say we're going to come to this formless, seamless forms. People can move within state government without opening a new file everywhere they go. When? I guess is all.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I guess what my boss, the governor, wants timelines. My boss, the governor, wants to be able to stand up and say, here's what we've done, and he wants it quick. And that's one of the challenges that I have, is that he's really serious about this. You know, and the message that I've given personally to agency heads is when the governor says, I'm interested in changing the way government works,
know, it's not a campaign slogan. The campaign's over. He's won. You know, he's the governor. He is truly interested in changing this, and has said to me just what you've said to me is, give me the dates. You know, when am I going to see performance expectations for every agency that I can sign with the agency? When am I going to see goals that the agency each agency will have with the measurements? When am I going to see this? So there are going to be timelines, and they're going to be fairly quick, fairly short. And you know, my hope is that we'll be able to manage that. But he's asking for very same thing that you are, and I don't want to be giving you the same message that the former director did and have nothing happen. I'm going to be here 2 years from now, I hope, and sitting in front of this committee. And at that time, you know, I want to be able to say, here's what we've done. I want to be able to say that before that time, because my governor is going to stand up and over the course of the next year and want to report to the public the specific things on what's been changed.
Follow it, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
A good beta test bed for you to see just whether or not there's been any change in agencies was a decade ago. I arrived at ODOT as a manager of a division, and I heard Don Forbes, as the agency head there, step up and say, we need to have employees move inside ODOT inside the divisions in ODOT without changes of paperwork. Mm-hmm. It would be curious to go back now, literally a decade, and see whether or not there is a new file created as someone would move from the rail division in ODOT to some other part of ODOT. And is all that would be as a benchmark to see whether or not there is any commitment to the serious kind of institutional change that you're talking about. I just would be curious to know whether you can move seamlessly throughout ODOT now when that promise is 10 years old.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I'm pretty sure you can't, because we still are processing through DAS the paperwork on, you know, a new PA, personal action form. See, that's why I don't know what the cost is, but pretty good for this far into it. A new personal action form is still processed by DAS for every change of appointment and stuff. So I know from that perspective, it's not seamless as it may have been described a decade ago. But the system is being built right now as we speak. It's underway to make that happen, and we're going to push very hard to.
Last point. I think the challenge for you, Mr. Weeks, is going to be to say the system is being built. Last night, Oregonians sent a pretty clear message about their intolerance with our ability to get stuff done. And I think that systems in construction need to yield to systems constructed and need to happen quickly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I agree. When I met with all the chief information officers a week and a half ago, part of that conversation was, I want to combine the networks that are out here. We run several networks, and one of the people who I have a lot of respect for in that group said, well, we've been talking about this for 15 years, which is true. I hired him in 1987, and I said, you know, that is true, and we're done talking about it. You know, we're going to do something. We've had 15 years of conversation about it. We are going to have a plan to merge the networks, and it's going to be done. And you know, I want to be able to come back to you and say, there are fewer networks, there are few telecommunication systems. I mean, I believe I may have used this example, Representative Johnson, when you and I have spoken before, and that is, in the state office building in Portland, there are 21 telephone systems. In my building across the street, there are 4. I was in the transition, during the transition, working on the transition on the third floor of the DA, at the Department of Administrative Services building. When I went to the fifth floor 2 weeks ago, I had to learn a new telephone system. Okay, that, you know, that's a big deal. I mean, that's measurable. You can change that. We don't have to do that. And, you know, how does it help the public? Well, it's fewer dollars. You know, it's better. You know, it's a single system that the public can access much more easily. That's very real, and we are going to change that.
Thank you. Proceed.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, let's see. We're still on the some of the key strategies. We want to, I've sort of alluded to this already, we want to capitalize on the technology to support our enterprise and customer service and so on. This next point here, balancing control with flexibility. You know, DAS has to be in a position of sort of leading and managing state government, but without doing it in such a heavy-handed way that we don't allow agencies some flexibility to do their work. And that's a tricky balance, but that's what I believe we have to get to. We want to deliver the services that to state agencies from us that are effective and efficient ways of doing business. Major program changes. Now, my understanding is we were supposed to report these are changes that have occurred in the past 10 years. So the first one is just 10 years old. We merged 10 years ago the Department of General Services with the what was then the Executive Department to create the Department of Administrative Services. So that one just barely made the 10-year list. Consolidation of internal support services into our operations division. We brought in our business, our information technology, personnel services all into one operations division in over the past 10 years. There have been additions and removals and transfers of policy groups, and the examples there are we've had a natural resource policy group for a while attached to DAS. We don't no longer do. We had an educational policy and planning group attached to DAS. We no longer have that attached to DAS. So there have been over 10 years the addition of these policy groups by governors and legislative assemblies over the past 10 years. The transfer, I've spoken to this already, the transfer of publishing and distribution out of what is now procurement and fleet. We've transferred that to Information Resources Management Division to because that's truly what it is. The cost controls, each division is going to speak to you about this as part of their report, that there are cost controls that are in place. Some of the examples are that we've asked the divisions to talk about are the streamlining of business processes, how technology is being used in divisions today that weren't being used in the past, the ways in which we've consolidated services within each division, and the consolidation of training within DAS. So those are some themes that you should hear in every division report to you. Let's see here. Information technology. Let me, Mr. Chairman, make sure that I make the distinction here. Within DAS, Department of Administrative Services, there are two IT functions. One is the function that serves the department itself. We have our own information technology group. Then there is Information Resource Management Division, which is the division that serves as the lead for all of information technology across state government. What we're talking about right now is our internal technology support, and its work is to support and enhance the divisions within the Department of Administrative Services. And our goal has been to try to centralize our information technology services in a way that really improves our own performance, but also ties to the greater work of the Information Resource Management Division across state government. A little bit more about the technology. We're trying to interface with related agencies, so we share information through our email systems and common applications. This point about providing services to the governor's office and the LEDS' law enforcement data system and the state police, they use those systems. The state police use a messaging system that we manage for the Homeland Security work. The law enforcement data system uses our email messaging system. They use our desktop support. So we're trying to serve some other parts of government through our internal organization. We have down there under systems, we're about halfway through a network restructuring that takes all of our servers and within the department and centralizes those services. That is going to be done within this year. And we'll be able to come back and tell you that. There are no system upgrades that are planned in this budget for the department itself. There are some system upgrades for information resource management division, but not within the services of the department. And lastly, I would just want to make sure that you understand that we do a lot of monitoring of contracts. Those are jointly reviewed through our operations contract manager. DOIT is the acronym for Department of Administrative Services Information Technology. So the D actually covers three words. I had to learn this myself, but I think it's the DOIT acronym is what caught somebody's attention in the past. Our online services, we have all of the policies for the department online, all of the newsletters, all the communications that go to employees are all online. All of our internal applications are online. There's real-time budget information, which I've not seen in any agency that I've managed. So within the department as a division, you can go in at any point and look at your divisional expenditures online. You can find out what's been paid and how it compares to the budget for personnel services, service and supplies, capital outlay, all that. It's a very nice system that I have not seen at any other agency before, and it's real time, so it's updated regularly. It's a great tool to manage within the department.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Will that be, if you could go back to the last slide for just a second,
yes.
Will that be a direction that you're going to want to help other agencies move towards? Again, I have to draw on my time as a manager at ODOT, and it used to absolutely astonish me that central ODOT accounting could tap into my accounts and take money without me ever knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
That it took sometimes as much as 6 months to get cash balances. Now, I want to be fair to Bruce Warner. This was in a time long ago in a land far away,
yes.
And things may have greatly changed. But it seems to me that if there's an insistence on this kind of real-time information in DAS, that there'd be an expectation that other agencies under your control would have the same kind of real-time, good, factual processes.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Johnson, that is exactly what I'd like for every agency to have. This is a principal management tool that we all have. We ought to be able, as a manager, to go up online and find out where you are. It's not designed to take money from any division or anything. It's designed to be able to hold managers accountable for what they're doing, for their expenditures, and so on. There's no reason why someone should not know where they are in their budget with this kind of data.
Yeah, I mean, particularly for the agencies where you're providing fee-for-service,
mm-hmm.
Timeliness and customer satisfaction and performance in terms of having them have real-time budgetary information seems to be sort of a sine qua non. If I were contracting for accounting services and it took me 6 months to get a cash flow, I might be looking someplace else.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, you should. It's highly problematic to be in a situation like that. So that is my hope that we'll... And to be fair, other agencies are trying to develop the same thing. You know, I don't want to say they're not doing anything, and I want DAS to, what we've learned from DAS, what we've been able to develop in DAS to serve as, models. And
one last thing, Mr. Chair. When you say other agencies are developing it, that at least leaves the impression that this is a box of mice somebody tipped over and everybody's on their way out to develop mm-hmm. their own system. Part of the benefit that I think your administration at DAS could help bring is some kind of common vocabulary in the development of these systems so that you don't have a proliferation of oddly mismatched accounting or any other kind of data management that goes on in agencies.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I agree, and that will be our goal. I just, getting back to the flexibility, there may be some management tools on the system that we don't have that are important to, let's say, ODOT. So I want to give them some flexibility and stuff, but I agree.
And believe me, I'm not whooping up on ODOT. This is my personal history with them is a long time ago, and I think Bruce has done terrific things in ODOT.
I just wanted to follow up on the online services. That's something that we've been looking for a long time. Just elaborate just a little bit more as to what we actually have there relative to information that's available, fiscal information, real-time budgetary information for our managers. Now, is that available, for instance, can Legislative Fiscal Office tap into that and find out exactly what's going on department by department so that we would be able to prepare budgets and budget updates on that basis?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we have given you access, Mr. Whalen, right? But there's nothing that would prevent us from giving the fiscal office access to the real-time expenditures and stuff. But Colleen or Jim, help me if I misspoke here.
I'm Jim Carboni for the record.
You want to come forward, Jim, so that you can get you on the tape there.
Our online web-based cash flow system that we're calling the REPBIPS now, it's Revenue Expenditure and Fund Balance Planning System, is available to anyone who we give access. Mr. Whalen can...
It's Dallas.
Dallas can access it. It's one of the issues, though, is it's very complex. It has lots of tools out there, so you have to know exactly what you want to go for. But, yes, anyone can access.
But, and your managers do access it at this point, Jim?
Yes, they do. We've trained every manager in our department to access it.
And it's real-time, so the check's written yesterday and the resources from one day to the next?
It's updated. We download once a week.
I see. Okay. Dallas, comment?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I may, I'd like to add to this. This is a remarkable tool that the agency developed internally using its resources. I think it pays about $25,000, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, for a license for the software. But
that sounds about right.
You will be seeing, and it uses, what I wanted to point out is it uses the existing state's financial management records.
Database.
It uses a database. And quite often we will see, or we see other agencies wanting to develop, at costs unknown, their own systems for tracking their expenditures when here's a department that set the example for developing an excellent management tool using the proper data at a very reasonable cost. And we would hope that that would carry forward when other agencies either bemoan their fate that they don't have access to that information, that there is a tool out there, at least that can be used as a base or a for internal operations.
We really ought to probably gather more information about that very early on, Jim, in this process, so that we can disseminate that to other ways and means subs, so that as we and utilize it not just within this sub, but all of the ways and means process, that this is something that we've been asking for a considerable period of time, the utilization of online real information, basically real-time budgetary information that should be available to managers within a department, should be available to Department of Administrative Services as well as from one agency or even standalone agency to another, and available to fiscal and revenue and all of the various offices so that they can gather information as necessary. So if we could get some in-depth information, what the capacities, maybe even a white paper as to what's available there for us, and then we can get that out so that as agencies come forward and say, we haven't been able to do this yet, and by the way, we're going to need tens of thousands of dollars to study the idea and the concept, that, you know, it immediately goes to the information management resources and we're able to come to your own information management folks and within the IRMD. So that Senator Winters is recognized. Did you have...
No, I didn't.
I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. You're probably scratching your head. You're welcome to go ahead and do it again. I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Dallas, you'll help us with that and coordinate with Jim.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Colleen has reminded me that the Information Resource Management Division is actually looking at whether we can make this into a statewide application right now. What would it take? How would we proceed? So we can talk a little bit about more about that when they're here before you. So
great, thank you. Yes, I'm sorry. Maybe it was Representative Senator Devlin who had his hand up. Please, Senator Devlin.
I was scratching Jackie's.
You were.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed, Senator.
In terms of this, I can see the immense value of this to management in terms of real time knowing where their agencies are at. But in terms of line staff being able to communicate to the public and being able to provide service. I like to give you one example because we don't have very many opportunities to give these examples to DAS directors. Last session, I get cases for child support on both sides of the issues. But I was trying to find out for a gentleman where exactly he was in terms of his child support payments because he thought he was up to date and other people were saying that he wasn't. And it took me 6 weeks to actually get him an accounting for where his child support payments were. And I don't particularly blame that on any particular individual in a department, but the amount of work that had to be gone just to find out where he was unbelievable. And I compared that to, like, my mortgage company. I could call up my mortgage company as I leave here and ask them what the current status is on my mortgage, probably up to the minute, you know. And it seems to me that in terms of public perception of government, those are the kinds of things that really give a bad public perception.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Devlin, I agree. I mean, it's hard to explain to anyone why it would take 6 weeks to learn how much child support they paid over what period of time. I agree.
And that's a Department of Justice issue, and have I got a bill for you? We've got a bill in to allow private institutions like your banks and like the lending companies and so forth to go ahead and be the collectors and escrow remitters under the State Real Estate Insurance Real Estate Agency Department that audits those, and they can track those. So there's a bill that I worked with with Senator Farnell, and it does exactly that. And they have a password that they're able to get real-time information from one posting to the next when a person pays in child support, and it will authenticate it so that a lending agency will be able to lend based upon the authenticated information because it's coming from a audited escrow company. So anyway, we'll continue to work with that. But that was one of the frustrations that we had to come up with that, to find somebody that could give us some authenticated information. Department of Justice said, wait a minute, it never takes us longer than just a few hours to get you that information. Your real case situation proves that isn't always the case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we also found, too, and I'm not saying that this is dictating change, we also found that there were multitude of different governmental entities that had a role in determining this, and so.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, this next slide has to do with the reductions that have occurred in the department's budget over the course of the biennium. We were asked to identify these, and they really fall in two categories: reductions that I think that the department initiated to its budget, and then reductions that may have been or were a consequence of special session activity or emergency board action. So this first slide are what I think we would call initiated by the agency as reductions to the budget. We permanently closed a surplus property facility in Medford. We reduced our custodial services in the uniform rent buildings, which leads to everybody emptying their own trash, something that came as a surprise to me when I got here. And as my trash basket filled up over two or three days, I was late one night, and the janitorial staff were there, and I asked one of them if I could get my trash dumped. And this one very polite way said, well, you dump your own trash here in these buildings now, and the bin is down the hall here, and
this is where you take it and dump it. So, which was sort of different from the Casey Foundation, where I spent the last 2 years and stuff, but not at all unreasonable. I mean, and that is part of what enabled us to reduce custodial service in all these uniform rent buildings, was to say to people, when your trash bin is filled, you take it and you dump it in either the recycle bin or the garbage bin. So, we permanently eliminated an insurance program for volunteer dentists. In 1999, this program was developed to encourage dentists to provide services to low-income folks and stuff. It was eliminated because it really hasn't ever been used. There just wasn't much demand on this. And so that's why it was backed out of the budget. And then the other, the final bullet here is the positions that have been frozen as part of the budget, and we'll get into that.
Representative Johnson?
In greater detail.
I guess I want to go back to the dentist for a second.
Mm-hmm.
That line and your comment raise a couple of questions in my mind. The first one is, earlier you had put a premium in your presentation on collaboration with the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that if you have professionals stepping forward willing to fill in gaps that exist in public service, that doing something to encourage them might be a good thing. Setting that aside, I know that we're doing all kinds of outreach to let people know that programs exist in food stamps and other areas. When this program wasn't used, it just cries out for the question, did people not know it existed? I mean, I can go back to my community, and if I hung out a sign that said free dental service and could say to the providers, you're covered,
mm-hmm.
I'd have a line around the block. What happened that didn't work here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I would ask the same, would have asked the same question when this was deleted during the biennium. And what happened may have been that we didn't do a good job advertising this. We didn't do a good job making dentists know that this was available, and so as a consequence it wasn't used. I remember when this was developed, I was at DHS at the time as the director, and it seemed like a wonderful idea, a wonderful way to get principally retired dentists to come out and do and provide some care. But it wasn't used, and at some point in the biennium, and I don't have this history, there was a decision made that since it wasn't used and we were having to collapse the budget to withdraw those.
Could we ask your staff to maybe get us a little narrative that talks a bit about the program and how it was advertised, how it was used, what folks utilized it, whether there was any advertisement for it, how dentists were invited to become part of it?
Okay. Mr. Chairman and Representative Johnson, we'll do that. And again, it may not. It's not so much that we weren't getting some services; they weren't tapping the insurance fund. But that could still be a function of they didn't understand that the state would provide the risk insurance for them. So
I also would like to know if any did tap the insurance fund, whether or not the tail has been cut, or whether we've left dentists who step forward as volunteers unprotected if there's a subsequent problem.
Mr. Chairman, we'll provide that report, and I meant to say to you in my opening that we're trying to record all any questions that we aren't able to answer, and we'll do our best to have the answers to you in 24 hours so that tomorrow we'll try to have the
Thank
answers
you very
to
much.
You on the questions you asked today.
Appreciate you bringing that forward. Senator Winters.
Well, Representative Johnson made the questions that I would have asked because we're both very interested in this particular topic. So we're both interested in the information of what happened, why it happened, and whether or not there are some tails hanging out there, because we were receiving information, as you know, when we had to make reductions in adult dental and some of the other pieces in the budget, that we've got some huge problems out there on the human services side. So we're both very, very interested in that piece.
Thank you. And these are the reductions that could maybe more appropriately be described as e-board reductions, special session actions. So we permanently eliminated the sustainability board. Again, I want to say that the governor Kulongoski, is very interested in the issue of sustainability and is
developing a different approach to this than what the former governor did. The sustainability board didn't really act. We had two positions with it. We did away with it. But that does not mean there's a loss of interest in this.
Thank you. Senator Winters?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to go back a little bit because you had you froze vacant positions. And I
yes.
just would like to know how many positions are we talking about that were frozen?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Winters, that's coming up. I've got a complete list of all the positions that are vacant, frozen, and so on. And I'll go through those in just a minute. So the other funding reductions, eliminating funding for the Progress Board. Now, that subsequently was restored, at least for 3 months, by the action of the last emergency board. At that meeting, the Progress Board was given the limitation to spend some funds that were available, and then given some general fund for 2 months, so that we actually have funding for the Progress Board through March. And in the interim, we have to figure out what's the long term.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One piece of information that might be useful to you. I was called by a representative of the Oregon Community Foundation, and knowing that you're recently coming from the foundation world, the question that I posed to Kathleen Cornett from the Oregon Community Foundation was, if you all are calling and advocating for the restoration of the Progress Board and you hold the work product of the Progress Board in such high regard, is there an opportunity for the private philanthropic world to step forward and fund this, given that you use some of the material generated by the Progress Board in making your grant-making decisions? And conversely, could you, in a leadership role, Oregon Community Foundation, leverage the corporate community into helping to pay for these services? The answer was yes. And so I think that in light of your remarks about wanting to cultivate these public-private partnerships, you might touch base with Kathleen Cornett at the Oregon Community Foundation and see whether or not, if they really value the work product of the Progress Board, that they would step up in a philanthropic context and provide some funding.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, that's a very good suggestion. And that was, I think, how the emergency board viewed their short-term funding, was that we were going to go out to foundations, but also to the business community who uses this information, and the governor does place a very high priority on it. That's why I appeared before the emergency board to urge them to give us some funding long enough to try to figure out how do we manage the board in the future. And the budget does continue the Progress Board within the director's office. It doesn't specify a funding source, as Dallas well knows. And so it's continued with three positions, and we'll talk much more about this in detail. But it's up to the department to figure out how we're going to fund it long term. And one of those strategies, I think, is what you've described, Representative Johnson. So we will pursue that.
Good. I'll be happy to give you the numbers or help you in any way.
Thank you very much. I didn't finish this. Grants were reduced to the Children's Trust Fund, the Multnomah Gang Prevention, and many others. These are not easy things for me to say to you because I think they're important and valuable investments, but they were indeed reduced as a part of the process of bringing the budget down for the Department of Administrative Services. I wanted to, again, following on the schedule that we got from LFO, talk a little bit about affirmative action. And this is our workforce as of the close of the calendar year. And you can see, in looking at the percentage of our workforce that are women, changed very little in the year. The percentage of people of color, exactly the same percentage. People with disabilities, some very modest increase. But basically, over the course of the last year, the complexion of the workforce in DAS has not changed. Now, one of the things that I want to say to you as clearly as possible is that my intent within DAS and within state government as a whole is to try to change these numbers. I mean, I'm very focused, as the governor is, on bringing more people of color into this workplace, more people with disabilities, really trying to change the way our workforce looks. And I'm working with the governor's staff on how we use the governor's affirmative action office, which is vacant right now, and we're going to fill that fairly shortly. And my interest is in tying the affirmative action work to what DAS is trying to do to manage government as a whole. I mean, what I have watched over years, and without being too critical of anyone in particular, is that we've done a good job of reporting this kind of information, reporting who's working where and everything. We don't do anything with the information, you know. We have monthly, or I think they're quarterly reports on this. And so we collect stuff really well and we report it back really well, but it doesn't drive any activity, you know. It doesn't drive our strategy around how we're going to build the workforce in the future here. And, you know, my interest is in changing that. This is just a little bit more detail about recruitment, how many recruitments were processed and the number of appointments we made. And of those appointments, which were women, people of color, and people with disabilities, our turnover rate is about where the rest of state government is. We don't have a particularly high turnover rate, certainly not like you'd find in some parts of DHS, where you have amongst caseworkers in some areas some pretty high turnover rates. This is an effort to try to describe some of the training stuff we've done that is under the rubric of affirmative action. I mean, try to train the majority of our staff in how you value disability, give our supervisors training. I guess this is a performance measurement. We had one formal harassment or hostile work environment complaint in the last biennium. I'm not sure exactly what that says. I mean, I suppose you could say we have a pretty good work environment, that out of 900 and some odd positions, we had only one complaint, but it is what it is. I think there are other ways of measuring, you know, the success of your workforce and stuff. So,
Gary, that those percentages within the workforce of the number of people of color and disabilities and women within the workforce, are those towards standards that are set by the governor, by yourself as the director? Where is the standard that you're trying to work for as you work towards hiring more people with disabilities or more people of color?
Mr. Chairman, the standard is there's a parity that's developed. It's a model that shows, you know, given the population of Oregon and the nature of that population, there's a parity that's established that says that state government, for each agency, here's the parity numbers you should be working toward. And that's really what sets our targets. I don't know if that's the right way to set the target or not, but historically that's what it's been. And I guess I'm sort of trying to think through if that is the right test for the kind of workforce. I mean, one of the things that interests me, Mr. Chairman, is to try to say, you know, the workforce we have should model in some ways the population that we're trying to work with. So if you're in DHS, you know, we have a population that's a growing population of people of color who are multiple languages. You know, we need a workforce that looks, feels more like some of the people that we're trying to deal with, agency by agency.
I just express a little concern that I'd just be very interested in getting the job done, but not as interested in making certain that we hire along those kinds of, you know, there's this issue of the affirmative action right now that is of concern nationwide, and I just make sure that I guess, you know, if you've got three people that are going to be doing some particular service to the public, it doesn't necessarily mean that all of them are necessarily white male, mm-hmm. nor any other gender or any other race makeup. It's just concerning to me that we just make sure that we get the job done, because, you know, to always make sure that the white male is replaced with the white male, or that a female is always replaced with a female. Sometimes we're going to walk past the obvious choices that maybe there's an opportunity for us to maintain a good person in that position without regard to the race or ethnicity or their sex.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Winters.
Along that line, I also think that given, and I agree with you, Gary, that with the population that we're serving, actually, if you have someone within that ethnicity, you oftentimes are saving money, because if you have somebody who is already can speak the language, who has the skills, you don't end up with two people on the job, you end up with one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, and that's true. I know when we were looking at building multi-service center in Albina back in the old days, we looked at the demographics and what we needed in order to serve that population, and I think that kind of parity is very critical, whether we're talking about Woodburn and the old believers community, the Russian community, and I think that's where, as I understand, where you would like to go, that we make sure. And also, inside this building, too, I think that we've got a lot of people who have some skills that could add some complexion to the building.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sensitive to your advice and don't disagree with you. I mean, we always want a person who's qualified and will give us a high performance.
Thank you.
And within that context, we'll try to build a diverse workforce.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry this looks small, but this gets, Mr. Chairman, this gets to Senator Winter's questions about vacancies and freezes. And what is in the left-hand column is what we have of positions that we are now recruiting for. So there's active recruitments going in. In fact, in some of these positions, because this is a short time back, we actually have some positions that are said in recruitment that we may have filled one or two of these. Then there's a column of hiring freeze, positions that we have put into the freeze. If you look down, one, two, three, four, about five places down, there's Human Resource Services, there's number seven with an asterisk. Six of those positions are unfunded board positions that I'm told have been carried in the budget for God knows how many years. Dallas may have a better understanding of this than I do, but that they don't reflect in the total number of FTE or positions we have, but they're unfunded board member positions, which we're going to get rid of. I don't know how they've hung around this long and stuff, but just so you know, that's part of that number. Under facilities, there's a number 23 with a double asterisk there. 11 of those positions that we have frozen, we've frozen because they are positions that relate to the servicing of the new building that isn't opened yet. There's an HVAC position, air conditioning, heat ventilation, air conditioning position, groundskeepers, and janitorial. And those are 11 positions there. We haven't brought them on, we've frozen, and when the building is open, obviously, we're going to need people to do that work. So those are the two reasons for the asterisks. The rest of those are positions that we have put in the freeze. And then the abolished positions are those abolished over the course of the last few months. And then you can see the total of the three. And as we look at each division presentation to you, there are some unique things, like in my own case with the director's office, there are two positions that are in a hiring freeze, and those are the auditor positions, right? Internal auditors. I want those internal auditors, Mr. Chairman, badly, because, you know, I believe in the importance of an internal audit function. I created one at the Department of Human Services when I was there, and I really hope that I can find a way to persuade you to let us keep those two positions. One will be an information technology auditor, and one will be a CPA, just general auditor. And those are very important to me to be able to audit and know what's going on within my own department. But among the other divisions, when they appear before you, there'll be a discussion about what's in the freeze, so that you'll know what basis to make your decisions on. Because I know there should be interest in positions that haven't been used for a long time going away. I agree with that.
Senator Devlin's recognized.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along the lines of that comment, when you began your presentation, you talked about providing leadership. at the state level and providing accountability. I'm just trying to get a reference point here because some of us are dealing with internal sort of strife and figuring out how to react to budgets of agencies that are not necessarily viewed by the public as what would you say, direct providers of service. Mm-hmm. I mean, while you may enable others to provide, you know, direct service to children, you may enable others to provide aid to someone that's being a victim of a crime, or while you may aid in someone in the teaching profession, you don't provide any of those services directly. And one of the things that's always talked about in terms of leadership is leadership by example. Mm-hmm. So is other budgets go through the Ways and Means Committees, and we see harm being done at the local level or pain occurring at the local level in terms of the people actually providing the service. As a leadership by example, it's almost, I mean, I'm almost inclined to say that pain has to be felt, you know, at the central levels of government also, and not just simply by the people that are actually providing the service directly to people. So I think that's one of the things I'll be looking at in terms of vacant positions is, you know, just because this budget doesn't appear high on anyone's profile doesn't mean that you shouldn't reflect some of the pain that, you know, key direct service providers are feeling.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, I could not agree with you more. I mean, I that's why I said to you, you know, that positions that have been vacant for a long time that we have no defense for, you know, why we haven't used those ought to be removed. I agree with that. And I do want us to be the example where I think it's important to keep those positions. I'll do my best job to try to persuade you of that. That won't be in all of these 80 positions. I think there are going to be and should be a number of those positions that don't stay in this department's budget. Now, in just 2.5 weeks, as we look at the director's office, you know, I've already combined two positions, got rid of one, and combined it with some other responsibilities. And I haven't had a chance to look through all the rest of them. But my intent is to try to do a great deal of that. Whether you do it or not, you know, I'm interested in a skinnier, you know, more focused department, and I'm sure you're going to help me with that. So, especially the skinny part, Senator. So.
Senator Weiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That brings up another issue that I think you should really think about, and that's the, particularly in this environment, that's reclassifications. Reclassifications used to, when I was in the executive branch, we had to request the legislature before we could reclass upward or change classifications. It's my understanding that's not necessary, the process this time. I'm very concerned that when, along the line of Senator Devlin, when we're causing, there's so much pain out in the communities, and then we come in with positions that we've decided because of that one caveat and duties as assigned, that the duties have, in someone's mind, has gone beyond what that assignment is, so we're reclassing upward. I don't know what your policy would be, but I know for me, I cannot occur. I was requested that during the interim of one agency, and I told them not on my watch. I hope that you're sharing the same kind of position. It doesn't bode us well in this building. Those of us who are in the position of both policymaker and those that are managing, of saying to others down there that we're not going to give you your medicine and other things, and we're taking particularly our managers and saying we're going to reclassify you upwards. So I needed to say that, and hopefully you're sharing my concern in that area.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Winters, I very much share your concern. My first week on the job, I was presented with a major reorganization package from one of our divisions, you know, a large reorganization package. I have approved some of the classified positions that were had to be upward reclassified based on a complete audit of those positions, and we couldn't take you don't have to reclassify a position. You can take duties away and not do them. And in this case, these were, in my judgment, not duties that I could take away. They needed to be done, and the people were not properly classified, and there was evidence to that. Those I approved. The management positions, I didn't. I stopped those, you know, and said, I'm not going to do this now until I have a chance to be here and take a further look at it. But we've also said no special merit increases within DAS. And when I met with the agency heads, I said that to them. I cannot force them to do that, other than to say, you know, my best advice to you, representing the governor, is don't do any special merit increases. Because there was a story that I was getting that some agencies were doing a bunch of special merit increases, which is to simply take the salary, give somebody a one or a two step jump in it, doing that as a way of getting around the fact that we're going to freeze salaries. I mean, assuming the legislature approves and we negotiate the contract, that there aren't going to be any raises next year. And so I said to all the agency heads, don't do any special merit increases. No out of class pay. You know, if somebody's working out of class, then they ought to be reclassed or duties withdrawn. There's all kinds of, for lack of a better word, tricks. It's not. I mean, I've done this a lot. I've been on the doing end, you know. And so there are ways to get people upwardly classified. And I think at this point we're trying to just put a stop to all of that. I don't think we can say there will be no reclassifications. If somebody truly is working in a job that they should be paid in a different class for, I think we ought to do that, providing that we just can't remove the duties. So I share your concern, Senator. I've had a chance to act on something in the first week I was there, and we're going to be very careful, because you know I know the pain that these communities of people are going to face across.
Mr. Chair, follow up. The other area that I would like to look at, and I don't know how prevalent it is, and that's the double filling practice, particularly when there's more than two. I understand that sometimes you have to double fill, but I also understand that that's also another method that we use over on that site sometimes, skirt around things. And while I'm on it, what is the policy on credit card usage, and how far down do we go in the system to allow employees to have access and utilize credit cards?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Winters, employees that require credit cards can get a state credit card. The credit card is their responsibility. So the state doesn't bear the burden of the use of the credit card, but the state provides the access to the credit card. Now, how far down it goes, we actually don't have it. Do we have a policy that says what level of classification? Could you come and help me here, Colleen, for the record, too?
For the record, I'm Colleen Seelock. I'm the Director of Operations for the Department of Administrative Services, Chair Butler, Senator Winters. Credit cards are all handled through our State Controller's Division office. They will be presenting tomorrow, and I will make sure and have the State Controller, John Radford, address those specific issues, bring the policies so you can see them. Because there has been past controversy, past questions even in this subcommittee. So we will give you a thorough briefing tomorrow if that meets your needs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we are trying to get through to the director's budget sometime today. It'd be a shame if we did this entire two-week function and didn't approve the director's office budget. So at some point we need to take a look at that. Representative Johnson?
Going back on my sense of deja vu, again, I'm respectful of the fact that you've only been here 3 weeks, but I think that the legislature ought to expect some continuity out of agencies despite the change of the head of the agency. And I recall Mr. Greenfield last session taking responsibility for a complete study on reclassifications. And I just wonder where that study is. Was it completed? Was there a work product at the end?
Mr. Chairman, let me ask Colleen to answer that, because I don't know the quick answer.
Again, for the record, I'm Colleen Seelock, Chair Butler, Representative John. I'm HR, Human Resource Services Division, would be responsible for both the reclassification study. They also did a management compensation study, which the legislature requested. And I think they're also going to be addressing the pay classification system. I know that the previous division administrator, Dan Kennedy, spoke quite often to the interim emergency boards on vacancies, on reclasses, and on hiring freezes. So I know that there have been increment reports, and I will again ask that division to prepare a summary for this committee as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I'm the last slide here before we get into the director's office. We were asked to do program priorities. There are program priorities for each division under these general categories. I haven't had a chance to do a list, and I think we've talked to Dallas about this. We'll have this for you by the end of our presentation, but we'd ask your indulgence to give us just a little bit more time to put the program, the department-wide program priorities together. We'll get it to you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, would you like me to just move straight into
please, please move directly into your
I'm
own
sorry, I've
budget
gone long. I've got to have somebody boot up to the next...
Corey, do you want to spend some time on the core overview now, or do you, what's your preference?
Mr. Chair, that's at your pleasure.
Well, why don't we come back for a review of the overview tomorrow, if we could, first thing.
It will be so chatty tomorrow.
No, we'll get to the bottom. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this gets into the director's office. I'll try to go quickly here. Functions, and much of this we've talked about, Mr. Chairman, already. You know, where we, the office that I hold is to supervise DAS, to help to manage all the executive branch agencies, the programs that are delivered under the director's office, statewide governmental affairs. The internal audits, which I spoke to, and hope that we can continue to have a strong internal audit process. My office is also the sort of the place where the Office of Economic Analysis is found, Tom Petowski's operation, and the Progress Board, as I mentioned to you earlier, is a part of the director's office. The mission, this is the same mission that we had for the department. I already went through this, so I'm going to speed on. Our goals, not unlike, you know, the department as a whole, the goals of the division of the director's office are to implement the policy and the financial decisions that you make and that the governor initiates and you subsequently make the final decision on to, again, monitor the standards of accountability and that's basically the same statement I've used for the department as a whole. We're trying to support strong and stable management across government. Again, we should be, as you have said to me, the examples of good government and the examples for all other agencies. And this final point here of partnering with the private sector is similar to what we saw before. Here's the organization chart for the current biennium. There's a director, director of operations, who's Seelock here. Her responsibilities are all the operational parts of the agency: the motor pool, the publishing, printing, the accounting functions, and so on. Then there is a deputy director who is Teresa McHugh. Teresa's responsibilities are singularly around the budget. She is what some people have referred to her as the budget director for the department. I've got three administrative support positions in the current biennium, and then there's the Office of Economic Analysis, the auditors, communications coordinator, and two policy advisors. Here's what this looks like for the coming biennium. Again, the director, the deputy, administrative supports are all the same. The major change that was reflected here is there's only one senior policy advisor. And what I said to you earlier, I've already taken one step. I'm combining this communications coordinator and the senior policy advisor into a single position. Cindy Becker, who's at the back of the room, is the assistant director for legislative affairs. Cindy has a background in communications. She's worked in government a lot. Some of you know her as a deputy at the lottery. She was deputy of Department of General Services years ago. She headed the printing division.
But I have combined two positions into the position that she holds, so I've already abolished one of the positions that's on this chart. I have to show it to you because it's part of the budget, but my intent is to...
Before we move on, I'm trying to listen to your presentation. I couldn't dig into this big book. Could you tell me what the compensation is for the Progress Board, the head of the Progress Board?
No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I can, but I don't know what it is. We'll get that for you. Do you?
I'd like that, please.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
But we need to know what the... Well, let us get it for you.
Thank
Representative
you.
Johnson. So
here's another position in the Progress Board. I thought it was just two and a fraction. It's gone to a full three as well. So, but that's another concern because that's not in this budget anyway.
Mr. Chairman, it's the positions are in the budget. There's no money for it.
Right.
Basically, what is being said is that the Department of Administrative Services is to figure out how to fund the Progress Board.
July 1st, it becomes very cheap, it sounds like.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe for the legislature, but not so much for me. So.
I just want to just take a moment. We have some FFA students with us today. Katie Owens from Baker. Stand up. Thank you, Katie. It's great to have you here. Elias Aguirre from Jordan Valley. It's great to have you here. Thank you very much. We appreciate your visiting the legislature today, and they just happen to be from House District 60, if you can imagine that. Thank you very much for coming. Please continue, Director.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, did Dallas have the number for
yes,
you? Or
approximately $85,000.
We'll give you the exact salary tomorrow.
That'd be great.
Okay. So anyway, I just want you to understand that I'm already in the process of making a change to what's in the budget that will reduce another one of those positions. What we call our service delivery, oversight of the divisions within the department, coordination of all of our legislation, our communication strategy, all of our statewide projects are under my office, the internal audits of our department, programs and services. The Office of Economic Analysis, again, creates the revenue, the lottery, and the prison forecast for you and for the governor and for the general public. There's all kinds of interests around how this is done and lots of conversation I know in this building right now about whether the revenue forecasting model is the right model. And we know that that's something that lots of people want to pay some attention to, and we very much want to, you know, participate in that conversation. Progress Board, I think you all know the Progress Board's mission around Oregon Shines and the benchmarks. The governor wants to use the Progress Board much more aggressively than it's been done in the past to help us with the performance of agencies throughout government. Performance measures, hold state agencies accountable for their performance. And I already went through the ways that I hope to do that over the course of the next biennium. Ensure that agencies develop the meaningful performance measures. Ensure that we are a high-performing organization. That DAS itself is a high-performing organization. Our intergovernmental and interagency initiatives are around coordination of legislation, which we do for the department and for other agencies. Communications, the technology leadership that we play, the performance measurement system that we're developing, the economic analysis, which impacts every agency, and tribal relations. Tribal relations is going to be something that my office is going to manage, at least in the short term for the next biennium. Our administrative cost controls, we're trying to consolidate. This is what I just described to you, consolidating our government relations and communications positions so that I'm able to, even before you hear this budget, abolish one position. We're consolidating our internal audit and performance management program, assuming you approve of that. Let's see. I'm supposed to turn to Cora here now.
Yeah. And I think what we're going to do, Director Weeks, we're going to go ahead and interrupt.
Yes, sir.
Senate is in session now. House is scheduled for 11 o'clock. So if we may, we will interrupt your presentation at that point, and recognizing that you've turned to Cora at that point, we'll turn the page on it tomorrow if we may. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate this presentation today and all that we've come forward with. We'll continue on then. Thank you.